The Viridian Nutrition range of 200-plus award-winning products includes vitamins, minerals, herbs, nutritional oils, specialty supplements, tinctures, and balms, all formulated to be healthful, efficacious, and pure. By choosing our Viridian Nutrition range, you are one step closer to your goal of 100% wellness. Ethical vitamins with an organic heart. Available at all Browns outlets. Browns and you.
On this show, we are enjoying Carpe Netto d'Oggiolo Rosso, shared with us by our friends at What's in Your Glass, brought to you by M&Z Wines.
Welcome to the She Word, conversations that women rarely have but really should, and welcome to season 5. So if you're joining us for the first time, welcome to the She Word. It is a podcast for women. Men are welcome, but it's all about issues that face women and how we address them. And quite often topics that we don't talk about. If you are an old timer, welcome back. We are so excited. We have the most incredible season 5 ahead of us. But right now, I'm going to let you know what we're talking about in this very first show. My friend Prab said to me a couple of months ago, we should be talking about women and age. And I sat there and I thought to myself, well, we've talked about women and age on a show before. But you know what? As you get older, a lot of things happen that you have no control over. Things start to hurt and head south. And quite often you can't do the things that you did before. But one thing that happens when you get older is you get experience. And I thought to myself, wouldn't it be great if I could have known when I was in my 20s, maybe even my teens or my 30s or my 40s, what I know now? And that is the theme for this show. This show is what women would have wanted to have known when we were younger. And I'm extremely excited because I have an all-star lineup for this show. Robin Pratt has been on the She Word a number of times, and I am girl fanning all over you again. I think it's actually fangirling. I'm not entirely sure which way, but I am a massive fan of yours, Robin. And recently, I saw an interview, I think it was an interview that I had, about you and an amnesia episode.
Yes.
And what you learned from that. And when we sat down to think about this show and what I wish I had known, I said to myself, there's no way that we can't do this without having Robin. Because every time you open your mouth, this wisdom exudes from you, and it's absolutely amazing. So Robin, I want to say first up, thank you so much for being back on this show.
It's a pleasure. I love to come and chat with you. You know it.
I am so thrilled. I'm going to ask you to fill in a little bit more about yourself in just a second. But before we do that, I have to mention Prabs. Prabs! So good to have you here. What a great show to start the season with.
Aww.
And I'm really excited. But for anybody that doesn't know you, you are a journalist behind a vast number of publications here in Malta. But when I was researching you, I also found out that you're a second generation British Asian, born in West London to parents from Punjab, but you've been London based with a couple of years at Disneyland. Which I'm going to ask you about in just a second, because that was great. But your husband's work brought you to Malta a number of years ago, and now Malta is home for both of you, and you are as much of Malta as I don't know, the Malteser Rock itself, which is great. So
almost
we'll find out a little bit more about you in a second. Clara Juice. Hello, my friend.
Hello.
I can't believe it's taken 5 seasons to get you on the show, but we have known each other for a long, long time.
Sure.
Through media, through what we're doing now. And a massive amount of respect for you. You're an actress. You are a TV producer, presenter. You're a wife, a mother. You're a pilot. And you're an absolutely amazing woman. And I'm going to stay with you. I know you said don't ask me first, but I'm staying with you. Because
we agreed.
Yes. No, you said, and
okay.
I'm not agreeing.
Okay.
Did I miss anything else out? Tell me about yourself.
I mean, what you said is happened in different periods of my life, and I'm thankful for it. And perhaps that is why they all happened, because they didn't all happen at once. And I had the opportunity to live life at that particular moment fully. And I think when you really commit to something at that particular time, whether it will be studying or motherhood for a period of years, you get to own it and become it, and it stays with you for the rest of your life.
So is there anything that I missed out? Because that, I mean, studying as well, you add that into the mix, but you are a TV presenter, producer, actress, you've been an award-winning actress, you've had some incredible films. And I think, you know, a lot of people don't know that as well.
There's something that has always been with me from the very beginning, and that is learning about myself. So I've always looked to grow spiritually, physically, mentally, evolve. And early on, I started doing yoga quite at a time when Malta, it was almost unheard of. I was in my late teens, and it was through a group of actors. So we were using it physically as a means of physical stretching, exercise, stamina. But I got into it really in a way where I used to go to silent retreats and became a yoga instructor. I taught yoga for a while.
Oh, wow.
And the only reason I don't teach is because I can't commit to a schedule. But I've just come back from giving a workshop where I use certain yoga techniques combined with what I've learned in theater, combined with what I've learned in TV and other ways, and construct my own workshops.
Sasha, who hosts the Young Women's Edition, has just become a yoga instructor as well. I have promised her that I would go to, I've never been to yoga in my life. Oh. And I've promised her that I'll go. I haven't been yet. So I'm really excited to have you on here. Just even from what you're saying, I think this is going to be a really, really, really important show. Prabs, Disneyland, sorry. Tell me more about you.
I'm just, that's hilarious that you, of all the things that you saw that, because that was actually, I think, was it the London one or the Paris one? Short story short, I went to Paris in 1992. There's a whole backstory, to work for what was then known as Euro Disney. Or Euro Disney, as they called it. And lasted about 3 weeks. It's a whole other story. But no, Walt Disney London was then in my next life when I came back from Paris years later. And I was temping and then working all over as an executive assistant. And yeah.
But now you're a journalist.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I call myself a freelance writer because I don't just do journalism. But it's interesting how people actually said to me, introduce yourself as a journalist, because it is actually really mainly what you do, and it's what people understand. They understand that term. And this, in a minute, will speak to this whole, you know, things I wish I'd known. Because the only reason I don't introduce myself as a journalist is because I just think, oh, get a load of yourself. Why would you introduce yourself as that?
Ooh, imposter syndrome going on. Imposter syndrome.
Thank you. All the mental baggage. Well, I don't have a degree in it, so how can I possibly introduce myself as a journalist? I mean, it's just taking the absolute mick, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, we will be talking. I'm pretty sure that's going to come up the first conversation. But how long have you been in Malta?
Almost 19 years. It's 19 years this October.
Wow. We're old timers. So we have different nationalities around the table.
We do.
Yes.
Because, of course, Robin, Australian. That's not a Maltese accent that you're sporting there. How long have you been in Malta?
14 years now.
14 years. Yeah. And you are, of course, the GM of the Phoenicia, the general manager of Phoenicia, which is an award-winning hotel here in Malta. You have done an incredible work there and really are such an inspiration to so many of us, which is why I've been fangirling all over you, because you have an incredible backstory. But fill in the details a little bit more about yourself. You're from Australia.
I'm from Australia, from a little, well, not even a country town. Didn't wear shoes to school for the first 7 years of my school life. Very small little place called Kalapa, which sometimes when the kids were younger, they used to laugh when I said Kalapa. But my dad's still there in the house that he was born in 88 years later. I love going home. But yes, I have three sons, two grandchildren, and Malta has become our home as well. Yeah,
that's brilliant. That is brilliant. I am really thrilled to have you on this show.
Keep your self-care journey on track in just a few clicks with Myoka Spas. Whether for a moment of disconnection, a complete body-mind reset, or a bonding time together, book online stress-free at myoka.com or use the new Myoka app. Complimentary spa facilities on every visit.
So this show is hopefully going to be one of the easiest shows I've ever done because there is one question.
Famous and last that is,
thanks a lot. That's why I've got you here. But it's going to be one of the easiest shows I hope that we've ever done because we're discussing what I wish I could have known. And the idea is like to look back on a couple of themes and say, you know, I wish I had known that before. And this is part of the journey that I've been with the She Word because the She Word for me as a producer, as a founder, as a host has been phenomenal. I have learned so much. You guys are mothers. I had no idea about motherhood. I'd never heard of postpartum. I'd never heard of perimenopause until I did this show. And so for me, not only that, but just even even thoughts and thinking and so on. So this has been a long journey for me as well. And every time I do this show, I think, oh my good grief. Oh my word, I wish I'd known that before. And that's exactly why we're doing this. So we're going to throw it on the table. Everything is there to discuss, to mull over, to chat, to argue about, to have another glass of wine about. But I'm going to start off with career and work. And you, Prabs, you mentioned that there. What I wish I had known with regards to career and work. Now, I'm happy to go first if you like, but I wish I had known earlier on that it's okay to take risks. And I'm going to contextualize this because I only fell into broadcasting and into media by complete accident and a very big lie. So, and I've said this a number of times, and I'm not going to deny it. I am a graphic designer by trade. I've done that for years. I graduated in London. I worked in London and New York before I came to Malta. And I had a graphic design client, and I went to see them in 2013. It was Clint Bayarda. I don't know if he knows that this. I've said it many times, but I don't know if he actually knows. But I went to the meeting for a graphic design meeting, and he said to me, he'd just been made head of One Radio, and he said to me, Trudy, have you ever done radio? And I told the biggest lie. I sat there and went, yeah, I've done radio. I did it at university. I'd never done radio. But I had this feeling that I possibly could, and I did not want that opportunity to pass. And I also did this when I had my very first interview in London as a young designer. They said to me, and this is when Photoshop One was around. This was the very beginning of time, before the internet. And they said, how well do you know Photoshop and Illustrator and what was Quark Express? And I'm like, I am an expert. They gave me the job. They sat me down in front of a Mac, and suddenly I realized that they were going to need me to use the Mac in Photoshop, Quark Express, and Illustrator. And what they did was said, listen, you're a great designer. You obviously lied to us, but we're going to get you to work late for 1 hour every night for 6 months until you are an expert. And I think that's the thing, is that if you are happy to put yourself up there, the same with Clint. Clint took a huge risk on me, but it paid off. And I stayed with One for, I don't know, 4 years. And we did TV in the studios next to each other. But I think that's it. I think if you think you can do it, I'm not suggesting that you should lie. But if there's an opportunity, definitely don't hold back. Go for it. Don't think about what might go wrong.
Okay.
Go, ladies. What I wish I should have known, careers and work.
Career-wise. Yeah, go on.
Okay,
go
so career-wise, it was about, and I'm 63, girls, so you were talking before about hitting the 40 barrier and the 50, and I was thinking, you know, I can't believe, and you were saying it's no age. And I used to think, wow, 63, she's done, you know, or that he's done, you know, that you'd have a judgment based on age or, oh, they seem very young to be doing this.
Yeah.
And I think starting back, way, way back, I wish, maybe it wasn't what I know now, but I wish I had not listened to people who wanted or who said I couldn't do something because of, I've had them all, like I was female. So I really need to realize that I'm not going to be able to be a general manager. You know, remember, this is a long time ago. Or, you know, moving, you can't do that unless you move overseas, or you can't do this unless you are much older. And there were so many things, and I convinced myself of many of those things, which held me back for a while. But then once I started realizing that really it was up to me, and I was letting the environment dictate my move, you know, who I would become as far as my career.
It's interesting that you mention age there, because you started off by saying, well, I'm 63.
Yeah.
And then you said at points, you were told that you weren't old enough.
Exactly.
But we do when we're young.
It was always sort of, back then it was, and then I always remember meeting a guy who was young but wanted to make himself look older because he wouldn't be respected, he felt, in his, you know, this is now 30 years ago, but back then it was about age, expertise, all of these sorts of things. And now I think on the other side, it's about, oh, but, you know, do you think you're getting too old to be doing this sort of stuff? So I think a lot of times, I love what you said before, Claire, about I don't let age define, it doesn't mean anything. No. And that's how I feel. I don't feel an age, but I think sometimes, and this is what I've learned, it doesn't matter how old they are, how young they are, how old they are. It's about what they're doing.
Yes.
And what they're adding to a team or a group. That's, I think, really important.
I can't agree with you more. I mean, I've never defined myself with age, and I've never, I dare say, defined myself with sex. Mm-hmm. So for me, there was no male and females should be doing this or that or the other. Never. And this, I think, was the starting point of what I wanted to do and doing what I want to do. I joked with you. I said, I'm going to probably be thrown off the show if I tell you what my first gut feeling answer to your question is. And basically your question is, if I wish, say it again.
What I wish I had known. What do you wish you had known?
If I told you that I knew what I wish I had known, but didn't know I know it.
Yes.
Will you throw me off the show?
No, you can stay. It's okay.
I did not know what I knew, but in my gut, you said you were impulsive and said yes to Clint. I know how to do that. I was impulsive to do and venture into what I ventured without knowing that I know that that is what's good for me. So, to put you in the context, I couldn't verbalize then, but I can verbalize it now, that I never wanted to do something that everybody else was doing, or go into a job that gives me stability, a fixed schedule, and a fixed guaranteed pay at the end of each month. I did not know that that is not what I wanted, but that is what I did. I started my career without a career, without a job of this time till this time and this fixed pay at the end of each month. I was only employed once in my life when I was 17 and a half for a year and a half. And then that's it. I've always been self-employed.
But can I ask you something, Mick? Because you just said that gender was never an issue to you. However, through this show, and I've said it a number of times and I'll keep saying it, I grew up, and I mentioned it just a couple of hours ago, I grew up in a country where the two most powerful people in the country were women. And I cannot tell you I didn't know until now how much that influenced me. But you're talking about defying, with all due respect, a really ingrained patriarchy in Malta, particularly at that time. So who was your motivation or your
My
influence?
Family, because from home, we were two boys, two girls, and there was no issue who's going to make the beds or wash the dishes between boys or girls or wash the floor. Everybody had to do it. My dad, who worked with the airlines for many years, also had a part-time job and he's an electrician, so he used to go after work to different houses and pass electricity. We all went with him. But I prefer to do that than wash the floor at home.
So, I have no doubt.
I was there helping my dad, passing the wires through the pipes and learning how to change the plug of my cassette player when I was 9 or 10 years old. So all those handy things we learned at home. So I think at home is the answer
That's
to your
really
question.
Interesting, yeah. That's really interesting. Yeah.
I see it as well through the different people I met along the way that, for example, even when I speak to those women who were the very first teachers here in Malta, and it was when you talk to them, that's what they tell you. It's their parents that made no distinction and put no limitation. That was the first reason why they would have continued doing and venturing out. I
hadn't thought about what you said. And I know that Robin, we're kind of going into this very interesting rabbit hole, and that's fine, because I know that you had some very amazing role models for you as you were growing up. But one thing that you just said back then about distinguishing at home the chores between the boys and the girls, and I just thought to myself, you know, Saturday mornings, we all had our chores. I think I was ironing. I was really bad at it. But from 9 or 10 years old, I would contribute to the home through ironing. I have two brothers, we all did hoovering and dusting and stuff like that. And after dinner, we all were required to do the drying up. My older brother always went to the bathroom and had a really long time in the bathroom. They got it. It took me years to work that out. I'd be like, why? He's got this really active digestive system,
that
right?
That is interesting. So yeah, one of my kids is busted because I'm parent to somebody who does that. And I've been thinking, it's just funny. Very coincidental timing. No, don't be so negative.
Busted.
You're looking for the bad in this person. No. So yeah, busted.
Stick with you, Prabs. What do you wish you had known? You alluded to something when you were talking about your career in London and France. So what do you wish you had known?
Actually, what I wish I'd known was that you can't or shouldn't use certain experiences, the experiences that you've had in, let's say, a particular area of your life, to then keep defining that area of your life. And what I mean by this is, so I came back from, I graduated from university and basically moved to Paris, early 90s, lived in Paris for 5 years, best of times, worst of times, it was amazing in many ways, worked as a PA there. Anyway, moved back to London, and despite the fact that I kept on getting, I'd get through to second interview, third interview in advertising agencies because that's where I wanted to be. Mm-hmm. I just knew, if you asked me what I wanted to do, I had no idea. I just wanted to be in the world of advertising. I was sick of being in the world of finance. I'd worked for a major multinational in Paris and I didn't want to be in that domain again. So interviewing, my socks off, and they'd fall over my experience and fall over my pedigree because they'd see, by the way, Disney and Amex, etc. And after a while, it just simply knocked the stuffing out of me because I'd always get through to third interview, always with, company. We can mention company names, we've done it, haven't
we?
So Ogilvy and Mather and Leo Burnett and WCRS and all these major players in the advertising world. I could not, for love nor money, then actually land the PA role simply because even though it was, I say just secretarial, not demeaning the role of a secretary, because believe me, it's a very hard thing to do. But I mean, as in, you're not the CEO, if you have got great secretarial skills to top flight, the top flight level as an executive assistant, you can do it in any domain. There are only certain domains where you would then need a certain type of background, legal secretaries, medical secretaries, what have you. And I just couldn't, they would just, in the end, they'd always give it to somebody who already was a secretary within the media industry. So my finance background was like a noose around my neck. I just could not. I interviewed for months and eventually went back into the finance world and was a PA basically, for another bank. So where am I going with this? basically, and it'd always be, you know, either you're underqualified, overqualified, or you're from the finance background. We're not entirely, you know, convinced. You know, the recruitment agency would say they just weren't too convinced that you'd be the right fit. And so that just can bring you down after a while. So I think at some point I just convinced myself, well, you're just not good enough for this, this, and this. And my dream, I didn't know this, by the way. So again, I wish I'd known this was my dream, but my dream was to be a writer. Pre-children, this is before we left the UK, moved to Malta, started realizing I would just love to be a freelance writer. But I was so sold on this sort of story of, no, but you're this. And I'd been a conference producer for many years as well. I did a lot of content writing then, but I was, I think, still so hung up on this story of, no, but you're not, they're going to say this, you're not going to cut the mustard, or, you know, this, this, and this. So I think, without realizing it, I sold myself a story of, it's just not going to work for you, you know, plus, I don't know if this is the forum for this, but attitudes in Malta whereby I didn't feel that I would be allowed into this very Maltese circle of, writing. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And admittedly, it has expanded now, and, you know, attitudes have changed, and it really doesn't matter where you're from now. Mm-hmm. But I would just wish I'd known, to sort of sum up, yeah, that you just can't keep, you know, don't let this story over here define, you know.
Don't let your past
just don't let
be
it keep
your present,
defining
you know,
your story, yeah.
I make like a change, that. Haven't you?
I like that. Don't let
absolutely,
your past be your present.
Yeah.
Love that.
You know,
but it's also you mentioned there about going into interview, and I would say this to anybody. Side story: when I went for my first job, I also worked for Leo Burnett. I worked for these big agencies
oh
in London. I was a graphic designer working for these big agencies. When I went to my first interview, very first interview, I knew because they told me 350 people applied for this job. It was a graphic designer for a marketing agency, a really amazing marketing agency. And I came out of university with a 2-2. I didn't get first. I didn't get a 2-1. I got a 2-2. I was fine with that. I went to the agency. I went to the interview and I turned up with my friend who was also interviewing for marketing assistant for the Royal National Theatre on the same day. And he went and had his interview. His interview was fine. He came with me. We went to my interview. I turned up an hour early because we'd just come from his. I looked at the client list on the outside of the building and I went, there's no way I'm getting this job. I went to the pub next door and I had a pint of cider. I walked into that interview and I'm like, hey there, how you doing? And I came over like I did not care. Because I wasn't going to get the job. And I just wanted to get to know the people. I was like, I'm here. I'm going to do this anyway. I got called back for a second interview. Mm. I got Tim to come with me again. I went to the pub next door. I had another pint of cider. And I walked in and I got that job. And in all intents and purposes, they had people that were far more qualified and actually knew Photoshop. And I didn't. And I got offered the job. But it all comes down to what you present and dropping the baggage that we carry.
And being
and
daring,
if you need cider, take it.
Daring to be different, you know? I mean, I don't, even with my children, you know, I always try to give this thing to them, you know? Be different. They keep telling me, but if I'm not on... Sometimes at 9 o'clock, I tell them, that's it, especially in summer, you know, go and read. And they say, my 12-year-old, he's like, if I tell my friends I'm going to go and sleep now, they'll laugh at me. And I'll say, dare to be different, you know?
Exactly.
I push people to dare to be different because that's, you just said it, Trudy. That's what, imagine you're interviewing people and you have 350 people. For goodness sake, you want someone to be different. Otherwise, think of me interviewing 350 people. I'm bored. If you're not going to give me something exciting to see, I'm not going to be moved.
But it's also dropping that label that you give yourself, like you were saying, perhaps. You drop that label. Cider did it for me. Cider was great. It was, you know, fine with cider, I was fine. But it helped me drop that little bit of preconception that I wasn't good enough. Anything else from you that you can think of that you wish you had known in your career, in work, in where you've ended up?
Yeah, I think we had a discussion about this in one of your shows, that Omen Hospitality started out casual waitress. And it was a bit like, you know, looking down. Oh, you know, but that really opened my world to hospitality. And I think, and I, we're even more so at the moment where we're looking for people in this industry, no matter where you start, it can lead to an incredible finish. And I am so grateful for my time as a casual waitress because it opened up such a world for me, my family, and the people that I've helped. And I often, because we just want to come, we don't want to be a waitress or a waiter. We want to be a manager of the front office. We want to, don't want to be a steward. But I had an amazing mentor way back then who I thought was crazy at the time, but now I wish I had have known more because he passed away quite quickly. But he said, get as much experience in every area of the hotel and you will be an amazing GM because you can do it. Exactly. And back then I'm like, oh no, I see my friends going up and being, you know, food and beverage managers and whatever. Yeah. But I think it's so important to get the basics.
On this show, we're enjoying Carpignetta Doggiolo Rosso, a perfectly honest wine for perfectly honest conversation. Carpignetta Doggiolo Rosso has a fresh nose with Sangiovese fruit and darker Cabernet influence as well. The palate is ripe, refreshing, warm and woody, with some juicy, chewy cherry and strawberry fruits. This wine is a Tuscan regional speciality. This wine is shared with us by our friends at What's in Your Glass, brought to you by M&Z Wines.
I latch on to what you're saying, but I also would like to add, this is my opinion of how one should achieve their dream. First of all, some people have a dream of what they want and some others don't. Mm. And that's absolutely fine, you know? And for me, if there's an objective, there are more than one ways how to get to it.
Yeah.
Robin will get to it through study, through practice, through experience, through sometimes we limit ourselves to what we know. And what we know is, right, if you want to become a lawyer, this is the only way.
Mm-hmm.
But the final objective as a lawyer, is that one, is that a box in your head, or is law a fan of different branches that perhaps one of them can be, you know, can give you more opportunities than the one that everyone's going to?
But don't you think that Robin just said something, and I just drew in a really deep breath because you said something along the lines of, "It doesn't matter where you start."
No, and I think a lot. Well, just
say
like
that again.
Incredible.
For
it doesn't matter where you start because. To
where, but you said it leads to a fabulous finish.
Mm. Yes.
And I think that,
and just to what Claire was saying, that how you get to somewhere, many times have it scripted. You know, it's, you know, and I didn't know I wanted to be in hospitality. Honestly, I didn't know. And then all of a sudden I felt this little fire,
mm-hmm.
you know, like, wow, I enjoy this meeting with people, organizing things, doing things. And I said, it just sort of happened. But now people say, so, you know, tell me, you know, what you need to do to get to a, such a position like yours. And I'm like, well, honestly, it's been a real zigzag. When I first started out, because my dad had a pig farm, I'd be castrating pigs during the day and I'd be going in and serving, you know, the restaurant at night.
After washing your hands.
Because I lived after washing my hands, obviously.
I don't know how I could.
But after washing my hands, I tell you, talk about like we were really given all facets of female and male. But I would think sometimes, because I have this image of a person being all glamorous and, you know, in this restaurant and, oh, you, and I would think, I'd be looking and think, if only you knew what I was doing today.
Yeah.
But, you know, we have this little box of what people should be doing
yes,
and how they got
that,
there.
Yes, break them. And I would have been fascinated to get to know my waitress, what she does after. I would have been fascinated.
Because we just have this little box of what they... what they should be like,
Oh, this is how I grew, by asking people and having them share their stories with mine, with me, I mean, and telling me all these fascinating things. And I'd be so excited and so curious. Unfortunately, if someone doesn't have that type of, you know, vibrancy, I don't have the urge to find out more about them.
But do you know, I mean, I'm going aside, but this is also a lesson that I have learned and wish I had known. Everybody has a story.
Yes. Yeah,
and everybody has a journey, and no person's journey is less important than anybody else. I had on radio one of the ministers, and it was I was on XFM, and it was a very, very dry interview. It was so dry. I was interviewing four nights a week. And so, like you, I'm very, very interested in people's stories, always have been. And this minister, I'm trying to connect with him, and I can hear this, and I can hear my listeners tuning off. And I said, you got to find something. Mm-hmm. And I said to myself, okay, all men love football. So I said, okay, I'm not going to tell you who it was. I said, so which football team do you support? You know, are you into football? And he said, nope. And I just went, okay, this is dying. I am literally dying on air. And I said, what are you interested in? And he said, what is your passion? He said, fireworks. And I was like, okay, now I have a butt ton of questions about fireworks. How do they make them heart-shaped? I mean, literally, how do they make them heart-shaped?
Exactly, you'll find the
and
people.
And suddenly there, we've yes, got, yes, yes. He fires up, I'm interested, and there's always a story. Everybody always has a story. Yeah. We all want to know how to castrate a pig now.
Yeah, and they make a lot of noise.
Oh, God. Oh. Thank you. It's becoming too graphic.
Just like, stop recording because we just can't.
I think everyone, we deserve a sip of wine on this.
Oh, there you go.
No, but that, I think it all goes back to like what I wish I had known is also, and I'm coming more, not so much career, but I had to listen to my mum or been aware of how much my mum contributed to where I am now, because she went too soon. But before she went, I didn't know how much she would be a part of my life, especially as a young teenager living in a country and, you know, other friends are going out and doing things. But my mom was so much, she really was a role model for me. But I didn't know it back then. Yeah. And I really wish, something I wish I had have known now is to be able to say to her, Mum, thank you so much for all of this that you've given me. Yes, and, yes. You know, saying, Robin, you have to go up and help your dad castrate the pigs today because we have no one else to do it. Like, Mum, oh, no, but you do it. And then it's part of my experience, isn't it? It's part of my story. And I'm so grateful for those things.
I think that's a lesson for all of us. If we have our mums still with us, that, you know, we should all come off air and... Yeah. Go and call our mums. Yeah,
but you don't know. You don't realise it until it's happened, you know. And
it's also a process, but, you know, I mean, I remember in my teens, like, being rebellious and not seeing completely eye to eye with her. And thankfully, I grew out of that and she was still around.
Yeah.
So hearing you say that, it's natural that I had a rebellious period, just like my son is being rebellious with me at the moment. Yeah. I'm sure your mother and my mother can, you know, make forgiveness for that. But if only that period is not long and we do not lose them during that period, then be done with it and move on and come back to that connection with the parents, with the family. I can't stress enough how, for me, after children... Family, I mean, children are family, but when you're looking at the extended family and building a good and strong relationships with them, gives you the confidence, the personality. It does more to you than you think you're doing to them. By spending time with them, by loving them, by respecting them, it's actually forming you. That's what I found. Giving this to them has formed me.
I want to stick with relationships because this is the one that's next on the list. Relationships, love, and romance. And you said something that I'm going to claim this one. This one's mine. You said something right at the very beginning, which is, I really wish I had known this. And I didn't know this until I was 45 years old, that your gut is never wrong. If your gut says something is not right, it is not right. If your gut says something is right, go with it. I've learned recently that we as children and maybe teenagers, we can be conditioned to override our gut and to not trust it. And that was my experience for 45 years. I didn't trust my gut. Somewhere along the line, something had gone a bit wrong and I thought that my head knew better. But my gut has never been wrong. Thank Every you. Relationship that I knew was going to be a disaster was a disaster. Every choice I made that I knew was going to be right was right. And even when circumstances point to something being wrong, if your gut says it's right, it's usually right.
Yeah.
And I wish I'd known this.
Yes.
I wish I'd listened to it. I wish when I'd gone into a bad relationship and my gut said, this is not good, Trudes, walk away. And there was that moment, you know, when you have that moment where you're kind of going, I can go two paths here. I can go this way or this way. And you choose the one that where you override your
yes,
gut.
Yes, but sometimes it's through that experience that, of course, then you are shaped for a better person for the next one or for the next stage in your life. The trouble is, if you are immersed enough in it, too much in it, too late to pull out.
Mm-hmm.
That is, it's not going through an experience which you think is not right for you, but you hang on a little bit there and you learn something more. I believe that is healthy because it is teaching you how and what you want, what you need, and what you can contribute. It is if it is too late to pull out of it, or if the damage, the collateral damage is too much.
I think that also depends on, I've heard in later years, a lot of friends or people saying, well, you know, you learn from everything and, you know, everything works for the good and there's good things in everything. Actually, no, sometimes shit is shit and we have to call it shit.
Yeah.
And we don't dress shit up as a nice Christmas cake because it's just shit.
And that's choosing the timing to pull out.
Absolutely.
Yeah, and also I think not caring what others think of you or not wanting to hurt somebody. And I think women, I do think we do that.
Mm. You know, we plagued by
We don't want to hurt someone, so we'll stay on a little bit longer. I know I've done that. And as I've got older, I definitely say it doesn't matter what they think. As long as I'm doing the best I can do or the best for that person. Because sometimes it's hurtful for that person to continue on with certain things, with a relationship, if you're just doing it because you feel sorry for them, isn't it? So I think that's something that as I've got older, it's very much like don't worry what they think of you. It's about what you think of yourself.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. It's what, you know, when you look in the mirror, can you honestly say, right, this is why I'm doing this.
Yeah.
You know, this is my intention here. This is what's driving it. Because again, coming back to gut, you'll know if if you're not, what's the word I'm trying to find here? If you'll know what's motivating it. You'll know whether you yourself are being motivated by good intentions, bad intentions. So again, you know, trust your gut on the decision.
Sometimes it's not always about the other person not being the right person for you, but it's not right for that relationship. Or any relationship or any man, the perfect man, is not right for you at that particular time you are in.
Mm-hmm.
So in my case, these are the two questions that the career and the love part where I can honestly reply with a hand on my heart is I knew what I knew without knowing I knew it. Why? Because when I look back on some of the relationships I had in my early 20s and late teens even, they are wonderful men, people, and some of whom I still talk to today. There was nothing wrong with them. Yet I found myself sabotaging the relationship in a way or another simply because now I know why I was doing that. I was doing that because I had more to do in life and needed to do in life before I commit myself and my time to a man or a family. And had I done that, I'd be searching to do what I did after I build my family. And nothing wrong with that. Everyone has his own path.
Yes, exactly.
I'm not judging, you know, for people who got married young or had children young. It's absolutely fine if that was what you wanted and worked for you. But for me, it wouldn't have worked. And now I know it. When I later settled down at a later stage and had children late, I'm thinking, I could have never been this dedicated and wanting to be with my kids if they came 15 years ago. But that's me.
But you subconsciously knew that because you were sabotaging it. So again, it's kind of like you were listening to your gut. You kind of, you knew.
Yeah.
Like perhaps you say, you knew. And so but you didn't know it consciously.
No, consciously, absolutely not. Only now I know that that's why I was doing that. Because of the result I have now from the career and the love. Mm-hmm. Bit. I'm not saying I have a rosy relationship. Come on, it's absolutely human. But I can deal with it now. I would not have been able to deal with it then.
Any other thoughts on these lines about relationships and love? Because listening to you, you just said something there. You just said about, you know, it's not rosy. I think that there's a differentiation between something not being rosy and something being fundamentally wrong.
Oh, yes, exactly. Very good. Mm. Please. Mm. I have a lot to say about that, but I won't. But that's very important that we bring it up, you know?
I've been married for 23 years this summer. Yeah, this July, 23 years. And I wish I'd known, hyphen, this is the right for me, because it would have saved me an awful lot of angst, upset, sadness, depression, whatever the noun is, hyphen, that relationships do change. In my case, you know, so I married somebody, you know, we exchanged vows, etc. And I think I was very rooted in my vision of marriage, a relationship concept, and our relationship, which was founded on friendship. We were friends actually for quite a while beforehand, etc. So I almost, I think, carried around, if I'm brutally honest, an almost inner smugness about how, oh, well, we're not going to have these problems, or, oh, you know, we just don't exchange an angry word and, you know, just everything's rosy. And also those years of... you're younger, you got your collagen, you look different. And so those years of, you know, your husband absolutely just thinking you light up a room when you walk into it. And one fine day, because you get older, because things go south, and, you know, you realize the years of collagen, they be over. And you're different, he's different. Life has taken a few swings at you. You know, you've got three kids and you know, there's the whole sort of like, you know, all the bin needs taking out, the dishwasher needs emptying. And it's not the coming back to Disney. It's not necessarily the Disney fairy tale, or rather what we think is the Disney fairy tale.
Yes.
So basically what I think I'm trying to say is that I just wish I'd known that actually, guess what? Your relationship changes. There are, you know, dark clouds. There are stormy days. But that's meant to happen. You cannot be those people you were when you were dating and, you know, propping up bars and clubs. You were the last ones going home and, you know, you just didn't have a care in the world. And you can't continue that. You just can't. And guess what? The stages are all wonderful.
Yes.
It's wonderful. It's wonderful that you nevertheless, in my case, can still look at this person and go, yeah, but we're still for life. I mean, unless something awful happens, I don't have a crystal ball. But in terms of intention, in terms of what's in the heart, I feel, well, no, I mean, we're for life. I mean, so, and yes, it's not how it was back
then. But
isn't
that, I mean,
that was very hard for me to accept.
I happen to know, because I've researched for another show, that is one of the main reasons people separate and get divorced,
yeah,
is that their expectations,
yeah,
yes,
of the relationship,
yeah,
are the same,
exactly,
as they were when,
exactly,
they started.
Exactly.
Even,
yeah,
on the show where we sat down and talked about successful sex, Anna Catania sat here and she said, great lady, she'd go watch the show. She said that as your relationship sexually develops, you have to make sex dates. You,
yes,
have to date and arrange. I've got a Saturday night free. Let's go out and have dinner and let's get it on. But because it's hard, it doesn't spontaneously happen anymore. And things change. Mm. And a lot of, I had a friend recently who was really battling with the fact that their sex life was not the same as it was when they started dating a couple of years ago. It's not going to be. It's not meant to be. But if it was to stay in that period, if it was to stay in that phase, you wouldn't have that comfortable phase where you can actually, you know, not be too offended when your husband farts or something like that. You know, it's not, let's be honest, nobody when they started, well, no, most true. English people don't, they hold in those farts for a year. Yes. You know what I'm saying?
Really?
Nobody,
a year.
No woman farts for a year.
We could compare numbers, yeah, more than a year.
The trouble begins when he holds it and you don't. And then it's like, it's going to take you 1 year to show me who you are. I'm telling you up front who I am.
But isn't there a joy when you get past that bit, when you can just be like, this is me.
And it's all about perception. So again, there'll be people, there'll be young, you know, younger people, you know, hearing this and just being absolutely horrified and just thinking, well, then for me, the relationship, that's time to go. It's just dead. But actually, this is just it, you know, getting into the comfort zone, whether it's farting in front of each other or whatever it is, you know, and setting sex dates. I mean, which of course sounds very mechanical, but it's pragmatism. And this is the thing, you know, and I kind of wish that I hadn't lost so many years really feeling extremely down, etc., and dejected, because I couldn't process for a very long time that my husband, much as he absolutely, I think I can say this in public, you know, loves me, nevertheless, things do change. And it took me a long time, as I said, to just accept, you know what, that's okay. I'm coming out the other side of it, or I'm just realizing, oh my God, but it's okay.
Yeah.
It is okay. And I just and we focus on other
things that are happening in the relationship. I like that. I like saying yes, you know, this is, at the moment it feels like this is the age for me and for him to not be doing too much of that, but what else is happening in our lives?
Yeah, exactly. Do you still want to spend time with that person? Yes. You know, are you still happy when you hear the key go in the door?
Exactly. And you know, to go back to this, to bring it to on the table, because it's very important. There are things you can live with and tolerate.
Yes.
And there are others that you can't. And that is very important for you to know what they are, identify them, and not settle for them. Because doing so is disrespecting yourself and your life. And I value life above relationships. Or, you know.
Yes, so I agree. So, and you were talking about love, and we all went to how we treat others. And I think that's something I've learned. It's okay if you talk about self-love, and that if you don't love yourself, so much is going to go wrong. Like, and I think as women, we don't allow that. Even how we take care of ourselves, we're taking care of everyone first. And that's something, you know, it's like a painter who never paints his own house. I feel like I do that. I talk to everyone about, but you've got to look after yourself first. You've got to do this. You've got to do that. All of these things. And I think that's so important about loving yourself, and that it's okay to say that. It's not being selfish and arrogant. But if you don't really, really, really do things because you love you, everything else goes wrong, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I want to extend that as well, because it's something that I've certainly learned and I'm learning. I am still in this process, and I wish I'd known this. I wish I'd known this. But it's an extension of what you just said there. It's also okay to say no.
Yes.
It's okay to say no. And I think we take that for granted, you know, it's okay to say no. But do we really live by that? No, not often, because we, as you said, we are women. We are kind of programmed to care. We're programmed to care, be empathic, be sympathetic, and look after others. And so that would be at the expense of ourselves. Somebody said recently, you know, I don't want to spend time with my family if I'm feeling thin, because I don't want them to stretch me even thinner. And I don't think that they're going to get the best out of me, so I say no. And I'm like, good grief. Good God, good on you, girl. But isn't that true?
Yeah. No, I mean, I think in the last probably 2 years, my husband loves to go out, party. And I mean, I'm not saying he does it but if he goes out, he likes to really go out and have a good one. And I used to, like, by 2 o'clock, I'd be like, I just need to go home. But I felt like I couldn't, you know, that I couldn't say.
2 o'clock?
Yes.
I'm like, I'm in bed by 10.
Yeah. I'm talking about it. And all of a sudden I said, no, it's okay if I say no. I'm happy for you to go out, enjoy the night and be with others, and because that's what you need every so often, a blowout. Yeah. But it's okay for me to say, look, honey, I'm going home. Oh. And the first time, like, everyone's like, are you okay? I'm like, yeah, I just want to go home. I really don't feel like this. And now I realize all those years, I'm like, oh, my God, I just need to go home.
Oh, I wish you'd done it before.
Yes. And it's good. We both realize that that's what makes him happy every so often. And I really don't need to do that.
Yeah. What a great takeaway. It's okay to say no.
Yes.
Enough is enough. Not up for it. It's okay.
Mm-hmm. We're often stuck in what others are thinking and how they perceive me. It happens. It's a natural thing, I think, of society, of, you know, you want to be perceived as a nice woman, as a good wife, as this or that or the other. But you can't forget yourself in the process of what you really need and what you really want. And you can do it with grace and come out with flying colors.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, you know?
Absolutely. It's all about the delivery.
Exactly. I can say I'm going and storm off, yes, or I can say, I've had a lovely night. That's it for me. I need my beauty sleep. I'm off.
Yes.
I wish I would have known I needed to work on my delivery. And I'm not even, and I know it sounds like a sarcastic, perhaps like flippant thingy, but actually genuinely, that's, if I did need to make a list, I remember when was talking to us about the theme of this, and I'm thinking, my brain is empty. I can't think of one single thing I'm going to say. And actually, I'm just sitting here thinking, oh my God, the list is long. And really,
yes,
genuinely wish that somehow I had known about this, honestly, in my 20s, because I feel that the lack of conscious thought about delivery has caused, you know, problems. It's definitely explained. You know, now I look back and think, right. Yeah. You know, it's like this massive light bulb going on.
But we lack being taught these things at school or as we're growing up. These are all the life skills that we should be learning, no?
Absolutely.
This is the thing. And self-love. I mean, we weren't taught this. I mean, my God, growing up in the UK in the 70s, you'd get slapped if you started talking about self-love. I know. Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, exactly.
Not known.
My mother
even in the
80s. No.
And to be honest, it was a very Americanized concept anyway. It was very sort of self-helpy and very looked down on. You know, I don't know about you, Trudy, but I love, by the way, you know, my Indian and British roots, but we are quite disparaging as a culture. We can be very, you know, great sense of humor, but a real distrust around and a real cynicism, very, very, very cynical.
Very cynical. Yes.
It's changing. It is changing, absolutely changing. Healthier attitudes towards therapy, whereas, you know, again, in the 70s, 80s, 90s even, you did not discuss this over a coffee. I mean, it'd be a freak if you said to people that you were going to therapy. I mean, really, you know. So again, we shouldn't beat ourselves up. There are things for me, yes, I do wish I'd known this, but at the same time, I kind of go, yeah, but you weren't living at a time where you would have known it perhaps, so just lighten up. There are certain other things I was living at a time where I could have and should have known, you know, and had I known, would have implemented.
But there are always pioneers.
They are, like Trudy is bringing this, and that's why the She Word came up, isn't it? Yeah, where it things is. That... people don't want to talk about.
Absolutely. Conversations that women rarely have, but really should. And I wanted to say that I want to come back to something that you said just back there, Claire, and I want to stick with, because otherwise I'll forget it. And I want to stick with this theme of love, romance, and relationships. And you were talking about quality of relationships. And something, again, that I learned very much later in life, probably at 45, is that love should never be earned or weaponized.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that we as young women, older women, we as women accept the complete opposite of love. When someone uses it, not just in a romantic sense, it could be a parent, you know, a guilt trip. We're English. Oh, we're good at this stuff. But anyone offering conditional love, I'll love you if you do this.
Yes.
I'll love you if you behave like that. I'll love you if you put up with that. That's not love at all.
No.
Love is not conditional. And you said something, and as soon as you said it, it triggered a thought in me that I wanted to just mention that, because when you really experience love that is true and accepting, and you see someone who you're with someone who sees you on your worst day and still loves you, when you're saying all of the crap that you really know in your gut you shouldn't be saying, and you're saying it because something's happened and the world has fallen apart over here, and actually you just want to vent, and they'd say to you, okay, I'm not going to accept what you're saying, but I'm going to love you anyway because you're having a really bad day. That's love. Not this, I'll love you if you look like this, if you behave like this, if you do this, if you are this for me. Because quite a lot of it is narcissistic behavior, where we are conditioned to behave in a certain way. And I think it's really important. I wish I could have had that conversation with a 16-year-old me. I would have changed so many decisions if I knew that anything that is dressing itself up as love but asks you to behave in a certain way or accept certain things is not love at all.
Okay, test it. That's my advice. Test it from the start. First of all, when this is, again, me talking, what I wish I would have known at that time, and I think I did somehow, and it saved me from making certain mistakes. When you enter into a relationship, you must enter it knowing who you are. If you don't know who you are and you're looking for yourself in the other person, then don't blame the other person for treating you in this way or in that way or in the other. In a sense, if you have a lack of insecurity or low self-esteem and you're looking for a man or a relationship to fill that for you, you are going to be disappointed along the way.
If you're looking for someone to make you happy and you can't make yourself happy, how are they going to make you happy? Because they don't know you as well as you know you.
So the first thing you need to do is, you know, enter into something knowing fully who you are and what you want and what you can live with and what you can't. That, in that way, it's nice to then discover who the other person is. It's really beautiful to show them who you are and allow room for change. So it's okay. I can enter into a relationship and saying, nope, I don't like red wine. And then slowly, slowly, you understand that you like red wine because somebody else is gradually introducing it to it. And it's okay to change and develop in a relationship. But don't look for yourself in the other person, because that's when the trouble starts.
Yes.
So how you test it is also, if you already know that about yourself and what you want from a relationship, and is this person going to really be good for me? Test it out in the most specific of ways. For example, you know, you have a career, and your career demands that you work a certain amount of nights per week or per month. What's the reaction from the other side to that? Are you being put down for what you do? Are you sensing that there's some jealousy for what you're doing or for what you're bringing home? Test it. Ask these questions and test. And then you decide what you want to live with and what you don't. But that's my advice. You need to go in as yourself and allow room for growth, even on a personal level, but test what you want to live with and what you can live with or you can't.
I don't really think that Claire's hit the nail on the head there. There's so many of us that go through life without really understanding ourselves and knowing ourselves.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I think the Phoenicia, you know, I had always known what I wanted to do at a hotel, but I thought it would never happen. And people say, oh, you know, you've done so much. But I really feel it's because I have such a strong sense of this is me and this is my purpose. I love giving to the team and making them feel special. And that's what's made the Phoenicia special, that there's such we've created such a soul. It is a family. And I don't think about it at all. It's just I have such a strong sense of purpose that this is me. And so it's that I'm not being dishonest to myself at all. Mm. So I think people feel that around me too, you know, in my family and everybody, because this is me. There's that song with the Greatest Showman, that wonderful, she sings, "This is me." Yeah. And I think it is when you find this is
when
me.
When you find that,
it's
celebrate.
Like, oh, yes. Wow.
I'm that never going startling. To be able to watch that film again without seeing you singing that song.
But like she's like, "This is me." Yeah, and it's like, wow, when you find it, mm-hmm. even when you see your children find this is what they want to do, or see people around you, and even with people in the hotel, they're not doing so well in something, and you think, okay, what do you really want to do? And you put them into something, and it's like, oh my God, it's like a different person. And
it's like the light goes
yes,
on.
Yes, it's like, wow, is that the same person that we thought was going to fail in the, you know, and then we put them in something else, and it's like, oh my goodness, it's because they found who they are.
Can I ask you, Robin, to put that in context of what I heard you say? I don't know if it was an interview or it was a panel discussion, you talked about that a light bulb moment for you that happened inadvertently because of you being affected by an illness, and all your preconceptions and all the no's, I can't do it, were dropped. Can I just ask you to share that story? Because that must have been, I wish I had known that before.
Oh, yeah. Like growing up, you know, we laugh about castrating pigs, but doing those sorts of things, it does make you feel a little bit, how can this Robin who comes from a little country town, quite a relatively poor upbringing, this imposter syndrome, you feel like, what am I doing in this luxury world of hotels and things? And in Brussels, I'd come and I was in charge of quality for 240 hotels. And then all of a sudden, and I'd always wanted to write a book of where I'd come from, what I'd done. Always told myself, no, who are you to write a book? And when I lost my memory, I just kept finding wanting to write things down. I didn't know why, and I didn't remember anything.
But backtrack a little bit just to put that in context, because if somebody doesn't know your story, you lost your memory.
Yes,
through...
I had an operation, and my brain went into global amnesia because of the reaction to the chemical in the amnesia.
Anesthetic.
Yeah, anesthetic. And so when I woke up, I didn't know who I was or nothing. I was a blank page, like this piece of, I was a white page. And so I found myself wanting to write, and I didn't really know why, but I ended up writing a book, but because I didn't have anything inside me telling me I couldn't do it. And I learned so much there, lot.
So you basically, and what really impressed on me, and it relates to something you said earlier perhaps, was that all of the conditioning.
So much conditioning.
All the conditioning you had all your life when you lost your memory was
went.
All
I was
gone.
Fortunate, actually. Everyone's like, you poor thing, you saw, after it happened, obviously, not during, when you don't remember your children or your whatever. But after it, I realized, it really was such an amazing experience. And also seeing people's reaction. But you must remember me, like I'm such and such, but sorry, I don't remember you. I don't, you don't hold any position to me. I don't remember you. So Brian said, as I said, he's larger than life and glass half full. He said, well, let's create new memories. And it's called to build a lifetime. So we build a new lifetime, let the past be the past. And now we build new memories. And that would be one thing I learned through that is, creating memories is just so important, and keep, capturing them and sharing them is something so important, isn't it?
Can I ask a question? Do you let's go back to the pig farm, people. So do you actually remember doing that though? Because
yes,
you spoke
so what happened was when the chemical, as it left my body, I don't have something that I don't have vivid memories of.
Fragments.
So as the chemical leaves, then my memory started coming back after about 6 or 7 months.
Okay. It's funny that you mentioned that, because I had a horse riding accident in 2010, I had two brain hemorrhages and a ruptured spleen. And it was in the temporal lobe. So my memory was very disrupted. And there's a lot of memory from that time that hasn't returned. Mm. But I can remember meeting people and they knew who I was and I had no clue who they were. And I remember, and it's one of the things we're going to move on to the sort of the last part of this conversation, is like you, and why it really resonated with me, is that there was something that happened in my brain right then that I was like, okay, I'm going to run the London Marathon for the Epilepsy Society for my 40th birthday. And there was nothing that was going to stop me, because anybody that said I couldn't do it, that had been gone. You know, I'm not an athlete at all, but I did it and inadvertently cured myself of epilepsy at the same time. But it's what we carry. It's, you know, I really wanted to ask you about that, because for me, I think my last thought on what I wish I had known is that we can do anything.
We really can.
And when you said that and I heard that interview or the panel discussion, mm-hmm. whatever it was, I remember thinking to myself, I really relate to that, because we lose the conditioning that we have that tells us that we can't.
The conditioning.
And in actual fact, we can do absolutely anything. Anything. We can recover from
an
illness where you lose your memory. You can recover from epilepsy with absolutely no
run marathons
and so on. There's nothing that can stop us from doing anything. The only thing that stops you from doing anything is yourself, and quite often that is from conditioning that tells us we can't do it. And I just remember listening and I was like, go Robin. But do you think that experience then, losing those conditions, losing that conditioning, then allowed you or enabled you or drove you to reach further, to reach higher?
Totally, absolutely. Even I have a story about my son who was quite badly dyslexic, my oldest son at that time. And we were in a very school. And I do remember it was called in. And there was this big circle of teachers. So Chris doesn't file very well, and Chris doesn't this, and he da, 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 went all around. By the end of it, I was crying, you know. And he was considered like, you know, well, it's going to be a lot of trouble to get him to where you want him to be. Anyway, not long after all of this thing with my memory happened, and of course for the boys, it was very tough to see their mother not really know them and all of these things. And anyway, this is our second marriage. They were going back to my first husband for the summer. And Chris was given a project to do over the summer. And normally this would be a very difficult thing for him to do. And so I said to him, how about I really, because they said, Mummy's lost her memory. How about I really try and focus on getting my memory back and you will focus on your project. Is that a deal? So anyway, remember I'm talking about an 8 or 9 year old boy. And he came back with this project, you know, because obviously he really wanted me to get my memory back. It was amazing, like incredible. And it gave him a focus, you know, sort of, if she can do this, I can do this. And he focused on it. He went back to school. What I'm saying this is that he had this project, and the teachers saw it and they're like, they changed their mindset about Christopher, that he can actually do something. And as they treated him as well, that you can do it rather than you can't do it, you can't file, you can't do this, you can't. He changed. This child blossoms so differently.
Let's face reality. Some people are lucky to have a good supportive system around them, and some aren't.
Yeah.
If you're born in a family that's constantly putting you down,
and that's
how can your belief of yourself be strong unless you are, you know, like genetically born to be positive. And I do believe, you know, that some people are genetically more prone to being positive than others. There must be something why someone is exuding positivity coming from an unprivileged background, and someone coming from the same privileged background ends up in prison.
But so, you know, I'm going to answer your question. I think I think a lot of the times it comes down to experiences. It comes down to not necessarily if it's not based on the people around you, it's based on the experience that you have. And I've had this conversation on the show with someone we were talking about addiction. It's a show that's coming out in this season. When you have looked at the very worst thing that can ever happen to you, you've looked it in the face and you've seen how dark life can be, there is nowhere else that you can go. And that just doesn't necessarily depend on a support network. That depends on a personal experience where you say, actually, you know what? I know what it looks like and I know how dark it is. And if I can get over that, I can get over absolutely everything. But we can apply that to small things. If I can get to the end of the street and I can't run, but I can run to the end of the street. Okay, you did that. I think this is the thing, is that we often aim on the goals without realizing that there are steps in between. Running a marathon is not about running 42 kilometers. It's about running to the end of the street and doing it again the next day and maybe 5 feet further and then keep doing it. Keep beating yesterday and just keep going. And I think that's, I got a little bit excited there. but I think if you don't come from that support network and that privilege of having the people around you to support you, nobody should be written off. Everybody can achieve anything.
Oof. No, it's true. No, absolutely. I think, I do some coaching of people that have had been through some tough situations, and we can bring people up or we can put them down. And at the moment, there's so much negativity around.
Yeah.
I really am afraid of how it impacts people that, don't have that same sense of being able to get through it, because it's so tough at the moment.
It is tough. What I mean by a support network, even, by having just one person giving you some tips, by one person taking you under their wings and spending some time with you and looking you in the eyes and showing you they care, anything that can give to that person who is distraught. Absolutely. At that moment. And it can do wonders to the characters, to their self-development, to the way they become expressive of themselves, of who they are. But I think, yes, we do need to reach out to people around us, and this is, I'm telling myself this, I should be more aware as well of my children, who's around them.
Yeah.
If they can, because our children, probably, and your children, you're here on this show, the way you're talking, they're already privileged that they have you as a mother. Mine are privileged.
I would totally say the opposite. Anyway.
So just by having a parent that cares for you and gives you a few words of advice in today's world, it's already a privilege.
Absolutely, yeah. But environment really is key.
And if they can be like that with others, because not everyone in their classroom is experiencing the same thing. And I say this through experience. And we need to be there for each other, even through our children.
Yes.
Being there for their age group.
Mm-hmm. Just as, you were saying, even if there's just one person, there can be a comment from one person, it helps. And I'm just thinking actually how, I'm sure all of us can remember a teacher, for instance, at school. We'll remember the ones we were scared of, the ones we felt put us down, and then there'd be the one that just seemed to absolutely see this light in us. And,
exactly.
And you followed that light and they just made you feel great. But equally with them, just going back to this thing of, kids who, of course, you've got the formative years, you've got the teenage years where they're very influenced by the people around them. And the thing of environment is key, because it can equally just take that one person to perhaps lead them down a bad path,
Absolutely. And you made me just think, you ladies made me think of something, and what I wish I had known. And I'm going to ask for your closing thoughts in a second on what I wish I had known. So that's why I'm telling you this story. What I wish I had known is that we as individuals have so much power to positively influence each other. And just from what you were saying, it made me think of a story, and I've told this story over and over and over again. But I was in the bathrooms, the toilets in Prague Airport, 1 o'clock in the morning. The flight had been delayed. Yay. And I walked into the toilets and there was a lady standing at the sink. And she was inappropriately beautifully dressed. She looked totally in point, but it was 1 o'clock in the morning, and I looked at that woman and I thought to myself, wow, she looks amazing. And I said to myself, there's something in me that said, I need to say something. But I don't even know if that person speaks English, let alone whether they're going to be receptive to me saying something to them at 1 o'clock in the morning. So I went into the toilet and I said to myself, I'm going to stay in the toilet. And if she's still there when I come out, I'll say something to her. So there was a very long, it was like my brother being in the loo after doing the wash, doing drying up. And I was in the toilet for way too long, but I came out and she was still at the sink. And I walked up to her and I said to her, do you speak English? And she said, yes, I do. And I said, can I just tell you, you look absolutely amazing. You look beautiful. And she looked at me as if she was looking right into my soul. And she said, you can't imagine how much I needed to hear that today. And we parted ways. We went off to our flights. And it must be a year since that happened. And I always wonder what her story was and why that mattered so much to her today. But like you're saying about the children in your children's class and the people that we have around us, we can make an incredible impact on other people. And it's not because that's us giving. We get back from doing that. We receive from doing that. If it's nothing else, you have a great story to tell, but you also have that power because you know you've impacted somebody else's life. That's me done.
You, well, you guys took have mine because to... I was going to say I wish I had known how much I can influence positively other people through how I think, how I act and how I feel instead of standing back, you know, because I think, oh no, I don't want to say anything. But I think that has been a big thing. And doing some executive coaching with women in other cultures, their culture is to stand back, you know. And just recently, you know, someone said in the feedback about this person, I wish she would step forward more. But she said, but Robin, you know, that's not done. But people want them to step forward. And I really, if I sort of had wish I'd had known back then, because I know, look, we're here around this table because we have an energy that has put us into certain positions in life where we can influence others.
Yes, yes.
Acting, writing, doing these sorts of podcasts, being a general manager of a hotel. We influence so many people through our words, through what we write. I never would have thought that I could do that. You know, I wish I'd have known how much I could influence others.
I love that.
No.
Claire.
Okay, so there is something I wish I had known. How little we need. And this is coming from a hoarder. I keep so many things and I have been spending the last 2 years consciously making an effort to part with things I have collected through the years that I have absolutely no use for anymore. And now thinking back, my consumption has been excessive in its frivolity. For example, clothes. So I would buy 10 cheap different things as opposed to one timeless piece because you want to have the choice. And now I look back and I think, oh, it's difficult to part with them because they hold memories and because you don't want to throw away. But now I wish I had known that I need far less than what I actually had at that time.
I like that. That is really cool.
Oh,
I like that.
You know, now I'm telling you, I've spent 2 years already and I still have a lot more to go just to get rid of the stuff which I don't need anymore. It's not of use to me. We need so little.
It's true.
Perhaps. Well, that's actually very, very often. We just because we look at something one way, it doesn't mean that it's the finite truth. And again, because of perhaps, you know, environment, upbringing, whatever you want to call it, not embracing self-development books necessarily at, you know, in my 20s in the way I do now, or just not being exposed to different ways of thinking. I spent so much time thinking, well, the way I think about something is the absolute way to think about it. And there is no other, and this is definitely the situation here, or the way I think about this, or this person's treated me in this way. I wish I'd known there are different ways to think about something. It's always a good idea to try and step outside and just consider the other possibilities that there might be. And very often things just aren't as serious as you think they are as well. Our perception is just so warped at times.
I like that. I'm going to chinch into that. Ladies, yes. Thank you so much.
See who drank the most?
I was very reserved. Chin-chin, I can't
thank
reach
Thank you very
it.
Much there indeed. Cheers. Cheers to everything that we wish we had known.
Yeah. Cheers.
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 Bomba.